This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Dr. D here, popping in just to tell you about our friendly neighborhood painting gallery. The Painting Gallery with No Name is a friendly painting competition to encourage accountability and participation within the greater Fury's Finest community. At the end of the season, the Fury's Finest patron Discord will vote on two winners, who will both get prizes, and then we'll raffle out additional prizes to random participants. At season end, we'll announce all of these winners on the show and celebrate one of the best parts of the hop. This season's theme is a two-threat character. MCP, 3D printed, or Marvel board game, they'll all count as long as they follow this theme. To participate, take a picture of your unpainted or lightly painted model. Then paint the heck out of it. Take four photos of your freshly completed masterpiece and send us all five photos to furypainting@gmail.com by May 1st to submit your entry. Make sure your five pictures have your names on the file so we know where to send the prizes. Good luck and have fun. I speak for everyone when I say we are excited to see what you manage to paint.
As of right now, we are at war.
How desperate. You call on such lost creatures to defend you.
How desperate am I?
You threaten my world with war. You steal a force you can't hope to control. You talk about peace and you kill because it's fun. You have made me very desperate. You might not be glad that you did.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people, see if they could become something more, like the battles that we never could.
Welcome to Fury's Finest, a podcast devoted to discussion of Marvel Crisis Protocol and the Marvel Universe. My name is Jesse Aiken, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Ruffett. How are you doing today, Chris?
It's a big week, Jesse. We got a lot going on. Can't wait to talk about more of it, but as far as Marvel Crisis Protocol goes and Fury's Finest, awesome week. We got some games in recently. I got my butt handed to me twice. Learned a lot, though. Very fun. Great night.
I had some fun games that night, too. And we're probably going to dive really deep into this particular night right after this and after dark. I got to play Magneto for the first time since his release, you know, like since you and I played him on TTS.
Yes.
And he was a brand new model. Correct. And you said, I never want to do that again, Jesse. So you're Magneto. There's a lot of people that had their time in the sun with Brotherhood, and I was just letting it happen, especially locally. You guys know I've been on my bad guy kick, learning all these teams that I've either never played or lightly played, and Brotherhood came up on the docket, and I was super excited to do it. And I played a Brotherhood mirror in the night where we both were three wide, and that was a super interesting game.
I believe that. I wish I could have seen more of that game. Otherwise busy, but I got ran through by Guardians. Just,
yeah,
their dice were hot, mine were not. I also made bad plays and he did not.
Yeah, shout out to Josh
played an excellent game. His new Guardians stratagem is pretty good.
Yeah, and Josh and I ended up playing on the final table of this night, spoiler alert, and Chris, you and I did something we haven't done in a long time. We did stream,
yes,
all these games on the Fury's Finest Discord, but our goal is to start streaming those more and more and more on the Fury's Finest Discord, but then eventually get back to the Twitch, get that going again.
Right. Plans are in motion, I will say.
Like we did in the early days, stream on Twitch. So yeah, so just keep an eye on the Discord for that. And of course, Twitch one day, but we'll talk more about that on After Dark. Because Chris, we're back in S.H.I.E.L.D. today, which is very exciting. Last episode, we talked Nick Fury, Jr., leader of S.H.I.E.L.D. We kind of laid the groundwork for our discussion going forward. We're going to be covering S.H.I.E.L.D. over these next couple primary show episodes, which will be very exciting. And we had to jump into a very important episode today, a very important character to the S.H.I.E.L.D. lore and strategy.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. It's more than just one character. This is comic history. This is one of the most in-universe influential characters Marvel's ever had. I mean, come on, it's Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos today. More S.H.I.E.L.D. Moreover, a three-threat character I think is very good and has not been quite explored enough. I think there's a lot of weird things yet to be done.
Sure.
With Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos on the MCP table. And maybe we can jumpstart someone's imagination today.
Hopefully so. I'm really excited to get into it, and especially this lore of this iconic character. But before we do that, let's tend to some business.
Fury's Finest is supported by Mr. Laser. Go to mr-laser.square.site for all of your non-local gaming store Marvel Crisis Protocol needs.
Fury's Finest is also supported by iWarGame. Go to iWarGame.net for the best marked MCP mats in the business. Keep an eye out for volume 2 coming in the future of more maps of different varieties, which I am going to buy one of each. Chris, I'm very excited about it because, you know, cities are great. Cities are a staple of this game. Without it, we couldn't have this game. I mean, they're like the cheese pizza of this game. But,
well, I mean, so much of Marvel continuity is set in New York City, man.
Of course.
We can't get around it.
But you got to break out from that cheese pizza, that pepperoni pizza mold sometimes, and get something like a Supreme or, you know, Meat Lovers or veggie pizza.
Put some figs on that thing.
Oh, man. Fig pizza is so good. Yeah, I had a fig and prosciutto pizza not terribly long ago that was out of this world. But hopefully, you know, there's a lot of creatives out there in the community making different types of boards. And I'm hoping that iWarGame and other companies in the future just make more tables that are outside of that city mold. Definitely, because our game is so creative and it rewards creativity in a lot of ways. So check out Mr. Laser and iWarGame. Of course, we cannot do this show without our patrons. Our patrons support us at patreon.com/furiesfinest. If you enjoyed the show, consider supporting us with a monthly contribution and getting immediate access to our private Discord community. We take this time to thank all of our patrons for their support.
This week, we want to send a very special shout out to the other BK. What up, BK?
Thank you, BK. And of course, Chris, we cannot do this show without our Avenger producer team. Rusty, Dylan, Rich, Jason, Puyan, Charles, and Sean. Sean joined the last episode. And that also means, Chris, that our Avenger slots are about to be filled up. We have a cap. So if you've been thinking about being an Avenger, jump onto that, you know. But we really appreciate our Avengers for their time. And we cannot do the show without them. All right, Chris, it's time to get over to Nick Fury Sr. and the Howling Commandos lore.
That's right, Jesse. So we have not just a character to talk about today. We have an entire group of warriors. This group has changed over the years, but of course, these particular characters, we talk about the MCP snapshot of a character, I feel, most lore weeks. And the snapshot of this particular model is clearly during World War II. So I think it's pretty safe to say that this is the original Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos. This is not Nick Fury, the suave S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. This is not Nick Fury faking his death, killing Skrulls. This is not the Secret Warriors. This is the original. This is the beginning. I think that's cool. Of course, we're going to talk a lot more about what Nick Fury is and what he's done in the Marvel Universe. Can't just focus on the World War II aspect because there's just not enough there. But first, let's talk a little bit about the Howling Commandos. And anytime you talk about the Howling Commandos, you have to start with the man himself, Corporal Timothy Aliasis Cadwallader Dum Dum Dugan. One of the dumbest names in comics, and I love him.
Yeah.
Well, when introduced, he's introduced as an Irishman. He will be retconned to being a Bostonian, but he is a former circus strongman. He will become Nick Fury's right-hand man throughout most of his life, really. And comically enough, during this time, during the Howling Commandos, he occasionally touches on why he enlisted, and that's because of his wife, Ugg, and his mother-in-law, Double Ugg. Kind of some didn't-age-very-well 1960s comedy.
Right.
But also, He says he prefers fighting Nazis to dealing with his wife and mother-in-law, a miserable existence, I imagine. So let's move on to Private Isidore Izzy Cohen. Izzy is the first demonstrably Jewish-American comic book hero, also a master mechanic. And this is the perfect time to say it. The Howling Commandos are an integrated unit, and for their time, for the 1960s, in a World War II book, that is a big deal. World War II books at the time are white men fighting against white men, and that anything else is not exactly socially acceptable. Not that this book is really trying to push a social agenda back in the 60s. It's just, this is just kind of how Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were, you know?
Yeah.
Let's move on to another significant member of the famous Howling Commandos. This is going to be Private Gabriel Jones. Gabriel Jones is an African-American serving with the Howling Commandos. One of the interesting things about him is he's the first African-American in Marvel Comics to be depicted, you know, as a hero to fight alongside everyone.
White European characters.
White European characters, Jewish characters, everybody. This unit was a family. But Gabriel Jones, not to be confused with Black Panther, of course, Black Panther, as we touched on in our Black Panther episode, T'Challa is not American. He is.
Yeah.
He's from Wakanda, which is in Africa. He is African. So he's not an African-American superhero. Gabriel Jones is not a superhero. He is an African-American hero. He is a soldier in World War II, and he's an excellent one. I don't know. I think it's great.
Well, and he's notable just like how Dum Dum is, because they're the two miniatures on this base in this game with Fury.
Very, very excellent point. And I think that was an excellent choice.
Yes.
By Atomic Mass. You know, if we could have got Izzy, that'd be cool, but, you know, can't win them all. So let's move on to Private Dino Minnelli. He's modeled after Dean Martin. He's a swashbuckler, handsome. He's fluent in both Italian and German. Private Robert Rebel Ralston is an ex-jockey from Kentucky. Next, we have Private Percival Pinky Pinkerton, loosely modeled after real-life commando and movie actor David Niven. He would replace the man we're about to talk to next, who, Jesse, also is kind of a big Marvel Comics first. Private Jonathan Jr. Juniper, probably the first character in comics to permanently die. One of the first heroes in comics to permanently die. He is killed on a mission in issue 2 and has never resurfaced or come back in Marvel Comics. This was a huge deal at the time, of course, because it was the first time it happened. So another first for Marvel Comics and another kind of groundbreaking thing here for the Howling Commandos. Next is Private Eric Koenig. Koenig is a defector from Nazi Germany, and he joins the squad in issue number 27. Private Jim Morita is an American of Japanese descent serving in the U.S. Army as a Ranger during World War II. He's going to join the squad at the behest of Captain Happy Sam Sawyer. Last but not least will be Private Jacques Frenchy Dernier. He's a member of the French Resistance and will kind of fall into the squad as time goes.
A lot of diversity, Chris, of people from different nationalities, races, and backgrounds. Like you said, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
This is all in the early to mid 60s too. I mean,
yeah, early, yeah, for sure.
this is 60 years ago. Not insignificant by any means. I think this is very cool.
Well, it's very awesome for this particular storyline because it is very American. You know, a lot of people from different nations unifying against the greater threat, which of course
the old melting pot.
Of course, the greater threat, which is the Hydra Nazi threat and these storylines, you know.
That's right, Jesse. And kind of to that point, I want to go ahead and jump forward a little bit, given that this is kind of a group of characters. It's not going to go exactly like all the other episodes, but I think we need to jump forward to the first appearance and just go ahead and officially get out there. These guys are created by Jack Kirby, Stan Lee. First appearance is in Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos, number 1. This is going to be printed in May of 1963.
Very cool.
So to the point of this being kind of a big deal and these characters being less than insignificant, I think that really kind of makes the point very well.
I'm glad, Chris, you led with all the members of the Howling Commandos and their debut, because as you can imagine, listener, a lot of today's discussion is going to be framed around Nick Fury Senior being the leader of this given group and being the superhero he is. Yes, superhero that he is in Marvel for so long.
He's super interesting, like we touched on in the episode last week about his son Nick Fury Jr. But Nick Fury, I mean, he's the original, right?
That's right.
He's the namesake for a reason. And let's just touch on his superpowers. Nick Fury is essentially an average human. Like his son, and like I mentioned last week, he does have some infinity formula going on. He's got some infinity formula shenanigans that keep him at peak physical condition. He ages extremely slowly. Some wonder if he's immortal. So like we said last week, this guy is maybe not, you know, 6'7" or whatever. He might be average height, but this is an Olympic level athlete. This is LeBron James, just kind of out and about. Like he is big, he's strong, he's fast, he's well trained. And as you can imagine, being so involved with SHIELD and the figurehead of SHIELD, later fighting SHIELD, and then eventually becoming the true leader of SHIELD, he's got a lot of gadgets.
Mm-hmm.
And plans within plans within plans. So as mentioned with this infinity formula, for a while, he's going to get this injected once a year, annually. It's going to keep him spry, going to keep him looking, you know, keep him looking nice, keep that hair nice and tight. Eventually, the last of the infinity formula is going to be used up. He's going to sacrifice that last dose for Bucky Barnes to save old Buck.
Nice.
But, you know, it's comics, so we can't have too much change too rapidly. So we retcon that a little bit too. There was enough in his system still that he's still aging slowly and still very, very potent and all these things. But yeah, like I said, this infinity formula does give him a little bit increased strength, speed, agility, all these things.
Well, and similar to all these other characters, like he's just highly trained in everything on top
there's
of that
also
feature.
That he's
hand-to-hand combat, weapons.
He is so trained that it is literally impossible to be this trained in real life. This is Marvel Comics trained. He's a master. Yeah. He's probably the best military strategist.
Yep.
In the Marvel 616 universe.
And he fought in three major wars, World War II, Korean War, and Vietnam. Oh,
and so much more. I mean, think about all of the things he's been through. He's been a
Marvel
major.
Wars. Yeah.
There is not a major team or character in the Marvel 616 where Nick Fury has not appeared in their comic at some point.
Absolutely.
This guy is the invisible hand in a lot of ways behind the scenes, probably the good guy. Power broker in the 616. I mean, I'm serious. In kind of kayfabe in universe, Fury's the man. He's it.
Yeah, he's like the Kevin Bacon point for a lot of people, you know? Seriously. I mean, the degrees of separation from Fury in the Marvel universe are very limited between every character, you know? It's crazy. You can like get to him through different ways. And got to talk about his eye, Chris. It's iconic.
Well, I think we're going to touch on the eye here through lore, but really, the eye, you know, we'll just use this as a jumping point into lore, Jesse. And I will start the discussion by kind of talking about his kind of awkward publication history.
Oh, let's do it.
So not only do we have this first appearance, of course, this World War II action title. This is a hot style of comic book in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
As you can imagine, you know, America is very, very proud of itself. It's the 60s. Patriotism is all the rage. We are ultra national, and we are celebrating American ingenuity at every chance we can get. World War II books, massive appeal.
Mm.
But after their introduction, Jesse, Fury's going to start appearing in his own stories in Strange Tales, which eventually is going to become, you know, Doctor Strange's book.
Right.
But for a while, like we've discussed in many characters that we've talked about their history in Marvel Comics, like many other characters, they appeared in this anthology book, and Nick Fury is one of them. But this is a different Nick Fury, Jesse. This is 007 Nick Fury, espionage.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, there's a difference in appearance in these two characters. World War One, Nick Fury and Sergeant Nick Fury and his Howling Commandos, there is no eye patch. Strange Tales, there is a full-on eye patch.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in an issue, this will be explained a little bit in an issue of Sergeant Fury's and his Howling Commandos, where his eye is injured by some shrapnel from a grenade. It doesn't appear to be too bad at first, but through the magic of comics and time, clearly the eyesight degraded, and it became necessary for him to start using an eye patch. I say necessary here.
That might not be perception. True.
It helps, but he also, this is Marvel 616. Yeah, he could have had this eye replaced, removed.
Cybernetically enhanced.
Any number of things, Jesse. But when asked about it, Fury would always say, well, this is my easiest course to have a disguise. When you're looking for Nick Fury, you're looking for a man in an eye patch. And I believe Samuel L. Jackson actually did this in the MCU. I think he touched on this in one of the post-scene credits or near the end of one movie. But when you're looking for a man with an eye patch and all you see is just a bunch of normal guys with two functioning eyes and some sunglasses or whatever,
right?
You're not finding Nick Fury, right? So
spy stuff.
It's some spy stuff, dude.
He also seems like the type of guy too that would, what's the word, Chris? There's some sort of ego there where he's also like, he doesn't want to inconvenience someone to do a surgery to replace an eye when he's doing fine with one.
Oh, he's doing better with one than most can do with two. So
yeah, so he's like, let's not use resources on this.
Why fix what's not broken, you know? I think that's a great point.
This is a reminder of the Nazis.
Exactly. And that's such a 1960s type of mentality too.
But he really found his footing in World War II, right? So it's like the fact that this battle wound happened in World War II, it's iconic for his character, right? Because moving forward, he always carries it in life, and maybe it's true. Likes that reminder. I don't know.
You'd have to read a lot of Nick Fury to find that out. And I'm not saying you shouldn't. Let's quickly touch upon where Nick comes from. Nick is born the eldest of three children to Jack Fury, and he is raised in Hell's Kitchen. He's very much a product of the Great Depression in many ways. I mean, this character really is a legacy American character. He is modern. There's a lot of modern American social history wrapped up in Nick Fury. And I think many talented writers have been able to bring that out from time to time. So all three Fury kids are going to grow up in Hell's Kitchen. As I mentioned, Nick is going to become an amateur boxer. He's going to join the New York City Police Athletic League, where he's going to learn marksmanship. And he's going to go overseas for the first time in 1937 to fight in one of the international brigades in the Spanish Civil War.
Mm.
He's going to be on leave in Guernica when the fascists will bomb it. This is going to play a major theme in his life. He's going to be an anti-fascist for the rest of his life, you know, and I think this kind of helps shape that. So after returning to America, he's going to leave Hell's Kitchen in search of adventure. He's going to do this with his buddy Red Hargrove, and they're going to start a death-defying, you know, one of those airplane wingwalker acts, okay, where they're going to be then discovered while performing their act by the aforementioned Samuel Happy Sam Sawyer, who is a lieutenant at this time. Sawyer was training British commandos at the time, but later, after Nick and Red will join the U.S. Army, they're going to go, after undergoing training, preparing all this, they're going to return and be kind of stationed under Sawyer. Unfortunately, on December 7th, 1941, Red will be killed in the attack on Pearl Harbor. And this is going to lead to Fury swearing vengeance upon the Axis powers and really jumpstart his kind of ascent to being a hero, I would say. Sawyer, who had advanced to captain at this point, is going to assign Nick Fury to command the first attack squad A company for the U.S. Army Rangers, who will quickly be renamed the Howling Commandos, a title Winston Churchill will give them after their first mission. They earn this nickname, this honorary title, for their very distinctive kind of war howl. And, you know, you can't, I'm not going to try to recreate it here. I'm just not. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Of course, I want to touch on a little bit of the publication history now of Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos, because this is kind of the end of the story for our snapshot of this character as it pertains to MCP. This series is going to run for a while. Issues 1 through 80 will all be original issues.
Okay.
Past this, I think into the somewhere into the 120s, it's going to be from issue 81 to, I think, 124. I could be wrong, but it's somewhere in that range. We're going to get a mix of reprints of already written issues and original issues. And then we're going to kind of move into only reprints for the last 60 or 70 issues or so. So kind of an interesting title, not as much original content as it would seem.
Okay.
But this is the title that you're going, that this kind of, this model is based on. You know, you're going to get a lot of World War II action stories, some more action-y. You're going to get some slice of life, some kind of challenging, morally challenging issues for the time. All in all, I think a pretty good series, especially for the time, but it is a product of its time. So with this touched on, Jesse, let's move on and kind of establish what Nick Fury is going to do through more, kind of bring you up to speed on Nick Fury, what he's going to do for the next few years. After World War II, Fury will kind of transition into being a CIA espionage expert. This is going to be Spy Fury. This is where the signature eye patch will really start to come in. We've kind of already touched on that while talking about some publication history stuff.
Right.
He's going to have his first encounters with superheroes. He will recruit Richard and Mary Parker, of course, will be the parents of Spider-Man. He will, of course, ally with Spider-Man from time to time in the future. The Fantastic Four. You know, he's really going to start coming into contact with superheroes during the stint in the CIA. And from the CIA, we're going to transition into becoming the second commander of S.H.I.E.L.D. He is the public face of S.H.I.E.L.D. Everyone kind of thinks he runs S.H.I.E.L.D., but in reality, there is an anonymous group of 12 people. Not even Fury knows who they are. I'm sure you've seen this trope in cartoons and television shows since this, but you know, the shaded figures on television, you know, anonymous figures that are just silhouettes appearing on a television in front of you, you know, dressing you down and giving you your orders. That is what he's dealing with here. He is at the mercy of this Council of 12. Eventually it will come to light that this Council of 12 has been compromised and that S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra have essentially been two arms of the same organization for a while. That is when Fury will wage his war against S.H.I.E.L.D.
Awesome.
Fake his death for years. You know, we're going to go into all of these wild things. And this is when he's going to be, during this time, post Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., post that comic running, which is one of my recommends for this week. When he takes over S.H.I.E.L.D., Starenko, with the absolutely amazing mind-bending art, truly a delight.
Mm.
Anyway, so this is going to be the period of time after that comic is going to come to an end where Fury is going to not have a book. He's going to be showing up in other people's book. This is when he becomes the background character pulling all of the strings. He doesn't necessarily drive sales, but he's so important in terms of storytelling. Just an absolutely go-to character. And of course, with him being this kind of go-to character for the man behind the scenes pulling strings or maybe showing up out of nowhere, and him being one of the only believable characters to be able to do so.
Oh, yeah. Because
he's proven, you know, over time to be willing to do whatever is necessary. Fake his death for 20 or 30, you know, how many years? Just completely cut people off, you know, not talk to his friends for years because he's playing at some angle. Just all of these things. He's a master of espionage. It's very cool.
Long game. Yeah.
Always
future planning, future proofing, I guess, in a lot of ways.
Truth. So this is going to kind of lead, of course, to modernity, where Fury's going to play a pretty big role in Secret Invasion. And I think this is a really fun era because this, everything that's going to happen with Secret Invasion and how he deals with this Skrull invasion, which is extremely pertinent to now, Jesse, as the Secret Invasion portion of Marvel is the MCU is really about to ramp up and Fury's about to play a big role in that. I cannot wait. But as far as how this went down in the 616 comics, he clearly played a major role. I don't want to spoil everything for you because I want you to read it, but he is extremely influential in a lot of things here, pulling a lot of strings, introducing a lot of new, younger heroes, kind of some wild Professor X style tactics that are not always the best, but, you know, excellent storyline Secret Invasion is, and really proof of how cool Nick Fury can be. But of course, post Secret Invasion, we're going to go into Dark Reign and Secret Warriors. Secret Warriors is an absolutely awesome, awesome book. This is my other reading recommendation for the week. I have mentioned many a time my love for Jonathan Hickman. And Hickman was pretty involved in this Secret Warriors run, especially Volume 1. The book's created by Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev, also excellent, excellent creators. I love Maleev's art. And, you know, Bendis has taken Maleev sometimes, but Bendis and Hickman plot this out. This book is absolutely awesome. It is Nick Fury at his best. It releases in February of 2009, so fairly modern. Like I said, this is some classic Hickman stuff. Bendis, with Bendis's influence, art's pretty cool. Excellent, excellent run. But this is going to get Fury and Dum Dum back as major players in, you know, a monthly comic book in the late 2000s and early 2010s. So that sets them up to be around, you know, even now. Now, after Dark Reign and dealing with Norman Osborn, Fury and the Secret Warriors are going to be active during the Siege storyline. They will move into the Heroic Age with Fury remaining underground. The Heroic Age post-Siege is going to be also when Fury is going to save Bucky with that last bit of Infinity Formula. And that's going to take us into where we're going to stop lore today, Jesse. That's going to take us up to Battle Scars. And of course, I recommended Battle Scars last week.
Right.
For reading. Battle Scars is where Nick Fury Jr. is going to be introduced. And we've already talked about Fury's part in that story. That's going to take us up to modernity. There's been some kind of wild changes to Fury's character of late. I would recommend you check that out. He is he's got a new name, Jesse. He goes by the Unseen now. So that's a little taste of what you have left to learn about what's going on with Nick Fury in present day comics. So Jesse, that brings us to his appearances in the MCU, and it's kind of a weird one, right?
It is a weird one because we actually don't have this version of Fury.
We do not.
I have a special shout out to a non-canon 1998 Fox movie, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, yes. Excellent work. David Excellent Hasselhoff. Work, Jesse. Oh, my gosh.
A mess of a movie, but also fun. You know, this is that era where it's like, you know, Marvel was almost bankrupt at a given time, Chris. And a lot of this was saved by other people keeping the license going, you know, frankly, Absolutely. Putting money into it. And one of those companies was Fox, of course. And, you know, when we've talked on this very show about how Blade kind of saved Marvel in a lot of ways, and it's all in this era. So, yeah, 1998, written by David Goyer, of all people, you know, who is the guy who did Blade. So this is one of those things.
Very
like
cool.
He had to make this pre-Blade to make Blade immediately after, kind of learn from his mistakes or, you know, things that worked and didn't work and stuff. But Hasselhoff as Fury, it's a good fit. I mean, clearly the character, it's one of those things now that like kind of similar to our discussion last week where it's like Fury was clearly designed before Hasselhoff was in the limelight. But as the years went on, Fury kind of got more Hasselhoff looking. And then in fact, AMG kind of went the route of the Hasselhoff looking Fury, like just the straight Hoff. Up. Yeah, the Hoff Fury. So it is what it is.
Nick Fury is huge in Germany.
There you go. But I will now talk about the actual MCU, which is Captain America, the First Avenger. No Fury, but all of the Howling Commandos, which is great. Howling Commandos, most notably for our purposes today, Neil McDonough, who plays Timothy Dum Dum Dugan. Neil, of course, is an actor we see all over the place. He's somebody who has been in a lot of primary roles and, of course, in a lot of B and C character roles. And then, of course, Derek Luke playing Private Gabe Jones. But we also had Kenneth Choi as Jim Morita, J.J. Field as James Montgomery Falsworth, Bruno Risi as Jax, and then we had Lex Shrapnel as Gilmore Hodge. So it's one of those things where it's like we have this diverse cast playing all the Howling Commandos. But for our purposes, obviously, Dum Dum and Gabriel bring the spotlight for us today. Dum Dum, of course, a major B character in this very movie, you know.
Well, that bowler hat, you know.
That bowler hat, that
Dum Dum always mustache. Has. He's always got that signature bowler hat on, usually with that full mustache, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Very iconic looking character.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really does. He has that like Irish Bostonian look, oh, yeah. You know. I mean, we've got that in spades and, you know, Neil growing a full red mustache like this. I mean, it just works quite well for the character. But we see the Howling Commandos in this film work with Cap mainly.
And they did in the original comic from time to time as well, which is really cool.
I just like how the MCU kind of was like, they made a decision, the Fury they were going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of gave Cap more of Fury's duties in these comic storylines in the MCU. As the primary leader, as the Fury of the Howling Commandos on these missions, you know, and you see the missions in this film. And of course, like, this is their movie. This is the movie we see Cap out of his suit, like in his fatigues with the Howling Commandos, leading them to victory. And it works. And the casting is great. And they have a great dynamic with the whole team. Not to mention, this is Bucky's first film. And of course, we know Sebastian's going to become a superstar after this. And this is kind of his first foray into everything as well. So great dynamics to everybody. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's kind of weird how well that movie kind of holds up. And not only that, but
yeah.
Just how good that movie was. Of all the characters to have such a surprisingly good movie, Captain America, you know, he's always just, I'm sure we touched on this on his episode even. He's just, you know, he's the Boy Scout.
Absolutely. And I think credit where credit's due. MCU, since Favreau's Iron Man was so successful, they shelved out the money for this. I mean, this cast is star-studded. You got Hugo Weaving playing Johann Schmidt, Sam Jackson as Fury. You know, we've got Haley Atwell as Peggy Carter the first time. We've got, you know, all sorts of actors like Dominic Cooper playing Howard Stark, Tommy Lee Jones playing Colonel Phillips. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones, like they shelled out the money. Richard Armitage, one of my favorite people who's ever played Logan, who plays Logan in these audio podcasts I've recommended on this podcast so many times, as Heinz Kruber, you know, as a villain, a side villain character. Stanley Tucci, you know, Toby Jones, like I talked about Neil McDonough as Dum Dum, right? Like the list goes on and on. So I think they really, the unknowns were really good in this. And then all the established actors obviously brought it. And it was just like, the rest is history, right? I mean, like we've got several people's careers who were fully launched by this movie all the way. You know, I mean, most notably Haley Atwell, Sebastian Stan, and Chris Evans. I mean, Chris Evans, of course, had been in the limelight before, but this was it. This is the movie. And, you know, you bring things like Sam Jackson and Hugo Weaving to support those actors, and you've got a great set piece. And I also like that Sam Jackson does make an appearance in this movie, you know, future tense, you know, de-icing, you know, Cap stuff. And we do get Fury in this movie, but that's the MCU, Chris, because we don't actually have Fury Senior in the MCU. As we mentioned last time, Fury Senior for us in the MCU is Sam Jackson. All right, Chris, closing out lore like we always do, give us your comic book recommendations.
Absolutely. I've mentioned them once, but we're going to go with Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., with most importantly, that Jim Steranko art. We're also going to go with Secret Warriors Volume 1.
Mm. Very good. All right, Chris. Well, now it's time to move on to Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos in Strategy. This is going to be a mouthful. Their names are Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos. They are our first instance in the game thus far of a multi-named character unit. So we have Nicholas Fury Sr., Timothy Dum-Dum Dugan, and Gabriel Jones as their alter egos. They are a three-threat character. Their defenses are 3 physical, 3 energy, 3 mystic. They are a medium-sized base with a medium move and a size of 2 and a stamina of 5. Chris, on their healthy side and on their injured side, kind of thematically cool, their stamina goes up to 6. It's not as good as, obviously, the inverse. We always know it's better.
You like to see that.
But it's nice. Like, I like it more than them just being 5 again, you know?
Correct.
Any thoughts?
Pretty solid, standard 3-threat stuff starting off here, Jesse. The one thing I do really want to touch on is medium move on a medium base, and it's very reminiscent of spider foes, in my opinion. Of course, that is what I think of when I think of medium move, medium base, because they have the kind of largest concentration off the top of my head of characters that have that. And something that's really nice about that is at the end of the round, even if you're only 4 wide, if you've got 2 or 3 medium bases in there, you're going to be where you need to be. It's not as nice as a long move, of course, but it is very versatile. It is a little more, they cover more ground than the regular small base. And I think that is very, very worth mentioning.
Yeah, it's basically comparable to a long move on a small base and similar to something like Venom, where he's a medium base with a short move is kind of comparable to a medium move on a small base. So there's a lot of nuances. There's a lot of millimeters and inches differences, but they're certainly faster than most units like this in the game. And, you know, it's going to come into play a lot on this discussion on this card because there are some movement things they can do.
Absolutely.
But we got to get into their attacks, Chris. They have 3 attacks. First of which is a physical attack called Prototype Weapons. It's range 4, strength of 5, 0 power cost attack. After the stack is resolved, the character gains 1 power, so it's a gainer, not a true builder. And on a wild, you're going to trigger Pursuit before damage is dealt. Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos may advance towards the target character short. Keep in mind, you got to advance inside that box, but you don't have to go straight on. You can go sideways, you know, as long as you're right in that box. I think it's a mistake a lot of new players make. They're thinking traditional miniatures games, everything has to go directly in a certain direction at all times. Well, that's very true with like pushes and stuff, but you know, in this game, these advances, you can kind of do a lateral move. And I find this very cool because once again, their medium move is coming into play. So they get a little nice scoot, really.
Yeah, it's a good scoot.
You're not always going to get that wild though, let's be honest.
No, not on, I mean, on 5 dice, it's going to happen a lot more than 4. But I mean, and let's be honest, with the being able to go have a little leeway with where you go on your advances is much more true to life than just, you know, drawing a straight line and going that straight line. There's a lot more nuance. There's a lot more room to kind of maybe find some cover to get a cover on those block dice, things like that.
It can also get you back on a point if like a character pushed you, right? So it's a nice way. And also, we'll just get all pretense out of the way, it's a really nice tool to get into range 3, which these next 2 attacks are range 3, without taking a move action.
Which is huge.
Yeah, it's really huge because they are a turret character. They want to shoot as much as possible, but they'll want to do it from a safe spot.
Correct. And speaking of shooting, this next attack, I am a huge fan of. This is an energy attack. It is grenades with an exclamation mark.
Love it.
All caps. Range 3, strength of 4, power cost of 1. After this attack is resolved, the target character gains the incinerate special condition. This is no trigger. This happens automatically. The only way it doesn't happen is if they're immune to incinerate. So this is great. This is one dice. You're putting a condition on them, potentially getting through some damage. This is good.
Obvious direct comparisons with Domino's grenade and Agent Venom's grenade. Though, I will say, Agent Venom's grenade, slightly better because the opponent can't modify their dice against him with the symbiote instincts. And Domino's grenade, much better because it ignores cover and line of sight because she's Domino and she can bounce that grenade exactly in the lucky spot. But at the end of the day, this ability is you basically just saying, I'm ready to pay 1 to get an incinerate out. Really?
Bingo.
And if the grenade spikes at all, which, you know, it can happen.
It can
or cannot happen. But you're really looking for the incinerate first, because then you're going to pour on attacks with the rest of these guys' actions and the rest of your team after the grenade's on the target. We know how impactful incinerate is in this game. And incinerate is like, math wise, it really starts doing a lot to the dice, especially with these D8s, which are so explosive. You take away more D8s, it just starts making things happen much quicker. And, you know, it's better than just double tapping with the prototype weapons in a lot of instances. And especially if it's a large character with a large health pool, it is always better to do the grenade first and then pour on the attacks after that. Because I think a lot of people read this, Chris, and they say, I'd rather do some 5 and 6 strength attacks, you know, spoiler for the next attack being 6 strength. But that's all good and all for a lower threat, lower health character, definitely. Like, the math kind of works better on that. But someone like a Thanos, a Malekith, the Hulk, or whatever, like, you want to get that incinerate out as quick as possible and just really start that value for your whole team. And these guys can do it. And it's incinerate on command, which I love. Though I did mention, it does have the weakness of being range 3, and it's at odds with their basic attack at range 4. So something to keep in mind.
And now it's time for the last attack. It is a physical attack. The Show's Over is the name on this one. It is range 3, strength of 6. Power cost of 3. Before choosing a target, Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos may choose whether the attack is physical or energy. On a wild, you will trigger Pour It On. After this attack is resolved, Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos may make a prototype weapons attack. So, with 6 dice, you're looking for that wild. You get that wild, we're throwing another 5 dice for an 11 dice in one, not technically one attack, but one attack action.
Yeah.
And that is awesome. This is a 3 threat character, I will remind you.
Yeah, you're cheating attack actions right now. You are looking for wilds, which is scary. But if these guys are just full on power, which is unlikely with some of the superpowers coming up, but if they are, especially if they just flipped or something, just go for it. Go for it with these Show's Over. I love that the attack type can be physical or energy. So it's almost giving you a quasi incinerate because you are choosing your opponent's weakest defense. And this can trigger in a lot of interesting ways. You can do the Pour It On. You can get the wild on this attack, get the Pour It On, prototype weapons, gain a power back, which you've actually refunded the cost of this from 3 down to 2 automatically, because you automatically gain that 1 on the prototype weapons. And then if you get really lucky and get the 2 wilds back to back, you get that pursuit with prototype weapons and maybe, you know, move somewhere a little bit safer, you know, after all this is said and done. But it's very cool. I think the biggest part of this is, as Chris said, the ability just to give more saturation of attacks, which is the theme of Shield. Shield is not good at attacks, but they are very good at saturation of attacks, and they will find the spike when they need to, because they are a gun line and that's what they're good at. And they're not good at like big attacks, but they are good at kind of cheating in more attacks through different means. And this is one of them.
This is one of them. And it's an excellent mechanism for that. But continuing the theme, Jesse, I think we have to move on to the superpowers.
Yep.
Because we're talking about saturation of attacks. And what's just a huge bummer when you're playing a big character with big attacks, that huge bummer is having to move with them, right? You want to attack twice every round. So Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos, they've got something to help you out. This first superpower is an active superpower. It is Siblings in Arms, and it is a power cost of 2. Choose another allied character within range 2 of Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos. Place this character within 1. Place Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos within 1 of the chosen character, or place the chosen character within 1 of Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos. A character can be placed by the superpower only once per turn. So, a few things here, Jesse. This is very, very similar to the Storm Hop. This is very similar to Bump in the Night.
Better than Bump in the Night.
Yes, it is better, but it is similar type thing.
We did this recently. We talked about the power of the superpower very recently when we did our Inhuman series and Medusa's Royal Decree and how powerful it is. It's the exact same ability as Royal Decree, except better, because you have a larger base model doing this. Mm-hmm.
So now we have a medium base model to hop one of these big heavy hitters off of, or to move Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos into the right spot. But I think the most important thing about this to really, really wrap your head around, we know how places work. We know how to work, you know, the Storm Hop. We know how to do these things. But this is not just a once per turn superpower. This is once per turn per character.
Yeah.
If you had the power, and you're never going to be able to do this, and everybody was in within range 2, or you had everything set up right, the Rube Goldberg machine set up properly, you could do this to every member of your team every activation.
Right.
That's not viable or really possible, but it is theoretically possible.
It's limited by the fact they only have a gainer, and that's intentional, right?
Because exactly.
If they had a builder, they could spike an attack and then just start sibling as an arms everyone. But you're right, Chris. On like a gamma scenario or something, the options are present to you where your team's all around you, right? Everyone's just kind of in the middle of the map. And if you've got the power, you can do it. I love this so much because this is going to come up aggressively in my affiliation corner discussion. But this is a big enabling thing, like Chris just said, to get a larger piece up the table. And the most interesting part of this attack, Chris, is the first power phase of the game, you get one power on every character. So that Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos have one power. Depending on the game state, the crises, and where your opponent has walked up to get objectives and secures, if you place the Howling Commandos turn zero very well, you could do a play pattern like walk up, shoot the prototype weapons, stay within two of your allies, and then sibling as an arm someone up before they have gone on their turn. This is all just round one stuff. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of ways, they're a really strong round one enabler, because they can just help your team get in position. I know Vince uses this a lot in his infamous shield list to get Dynamo up the field faster.
Oh, yeah. He's
so slow, you know? So there's a lot of things you can do. And I think the biggest part is, you know, if they can walk up and shoot a gainer once, they've got this online and they can start rolling these. And, you know, I think it's very fun. And you also mentioned, too, how they can use it on themselves. Always strong play. I've actually used it with them a lot to do something as crazy as a late game play where I double move, pick up an extract, you know, and hop over an ally to safety.
Yeah.
You know, like a web warrior move, essentially, with these commandos.
Yeah. It opens up a lot of interesting late game plays if you are willing to let your mind go there. I know if you start thinking of too many possibilities, it can kind of be a little bit overwhelming when it comes to games like this. But the important part is they bring that possibility. And I think that's incredible.
Yeah. And just like the storm hop, both players need to always be thinking about this, and it makes the game state very intense sometimes, because you're like, oh, wow, if they hop Hulk, they can like double tap and then jump him back, or if they hop the commandos, they can actually do the shows over twice back to back, like right now, but they can't because they're outside of range of the shows over. So like there's a lot of things that can kind of go in conjunction with each other. And, you know, I think a fine play a lot of time, Chris, is like, oh, I'm at range four with my prototype weapons because I've been sitting here all game here shooting range four, but I really want to get that grenade out or something. I'll just siblings in arms, my commando's up, grenade somebody, maybe walk back, you know, or shoot, you know, like get them to safety.
Yeah.
That's not a terrible play. It's, you know, like sometimes it's not as splashy, but it's going to give you that incremental advantage throughout the game. And speaking of incremental advantages and cheating saturation of attacks, they have one more superpower that's, you know, something they can do as a model before they're innate. They have a reactive superpower called Got Your Back. That's right. It's the same language and cost as Bucky's Got Your Back. It also costs two power. When an ally character is dazed or KO'd by an enemy effect, so keep in mind this is just global, after the effect is resolved, this character may use the superpower. This character may make a prototype weapon attack against the enemy character that caused the effect. So you do have to be able to shoot them. You got to be in range of the target that dazed your ally. But once again, this is kind of amazing on them in a different way from Bucky. So Bucky's is amazing because it can spike and it has got rapid fire, right? Theirs is a little bit less impactful as Bucky's, but just as effective, if not in an economy way, more interesting. So frequently with Bucky, you'll do, I got your back, you roll your four dice, you didn't get your rapid fire, and you didn't even get any damage through, so you don't even get power, right? Well, these guys, no matter what, they're going to pay for I got your back, cost two. They're going to shoot. They're going to get one back immediately. So every time they use I got your back, it essentially costs them one, right?
With the caveat of you have to have the two power to pay for it up front.
It's kind of like a mystique leadership, right? It's like you got to have the power to pick up the extract to get the power back, right?
You got to pay to play, baby.
But once they get their power rolling, they're going to have this whole game, right? And this is something you got to think about. You've got to think about always having two power on them to do this when their turn's over, which is very powerful. And, you know, they could also just spike on an enemy. But even if they don't spike, saturation of attacks is the way Shield plays, and Shield kind of sets up this defensive puzzle box I've talked about a lot. And this is another part of the defensive puzzle box and another way to cheat attacks and a way to just get chip damage all outside of your own turn.
Absolutely.
So it's a staple of their card. You want it. You need it. You got to have it. And I think you kind of hinted at it early on, Chris, but their last superpower, it's innate. It's stealth. Characters must be within range three of this character to target it with attacks. Only our second character in the entire game to have a basic gainer attack that's outside of their stealth range. Looking at you, Moon Knight, and these guys, right? So it's like, we know how strong it is on Moon Knight just to sit on a point.
Yeah.
And throw your crescents and just be in stealth because it is defensive tech, you know? So we did talk about how these guys have no interesting defense stats. You know, they're 11 health total, got basic stats for a three threat, but stealth is a lot of defensive tech.
Stealth helps a lot. It is very good. I don't have much more to say about it.
People forget they have it too, which is
100%.
Yeah, because they're not a stealthy objective runner, you know? So people
exactly.
Just, it leaves their mind.
I mean, the bottom line is sitting back and being able to double tap someone from a secure while they cannot target you without burning a move action or a superpower of some sort, as boring as that kind of is, it's mm-hmm. good.
It is good. And there's a lot more interesting nuance going on with these characters than even first you can like gather from reading this card.
Absolutely.
And part of it is this stealth. Part of it is these attacks, ranges. And a big part of Chris is the sibling in arms because you can put yourself back into stealth range, right? Like at the end of their activation. And what do you know? They're still scoring. I mean, ideally the situation for them is they're always scoring a secure and maybe they're scoring an extract too. And then, like, now your opponent's really like not feeling great to come into their range. But even if they're just scoring a secure, but one of your other allies is holding extract, now your opponent dazes the ally with an extract. They get to do, I got your back. Like mm-hmm. it's questions abound. So I like it a lot. And I think it's kind of one of those things that is very powerful in the game to be able to attack outside of stealth range is very unusual. I mean, we know how powerful stealth is on like Mystique, right? But it's like Mystique still has to get into range 3 to shoot her pistols.
Right.
Right. And we just know how powerful it is on her moving around the map. Right. So imagine if she had access to be able to attack while moving around the map and staying outside of stealth range. So very strong. And obviously this just pays dividends with the fact they're a medium base, medium mover with stealth. It's just easier to keep them in stealth, easier to put them in interesting safe positions, you know, because they just have more movement.
Absolutely. The interesting thing with Shield, and I think their kit kind of really illustrates this well, is it's a lot of interlocking parts. It's a lot of pieces that move together.
Yes.
It's kind of a machine in that kind of sense. And I find it extremely fascinating. It's very cool.
They're probably one of the most rewarding teams in the game to go fully affiliated and also like to learn the mechanisms of the machine of all these pieces working in tandem, because there's so many things working in tandem with this team. And it's more than just, well, they're low health characters with guns that shoot from range. It's more than that, you know.
It's a lot more than that. They've got a lot going on. I think they're one of the more complex three threat characters. And Jesse, I'm not gonna lie, their team tactics card doesn't make it any less complicated.
No, and it's really fun. So it's got the fun factor.
It's very cool, dude.
And it's got the complicated factor. Yeah, so infiltration. It's unaffiliated and reactive. If Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos and this card are part of your squad, do not deploy Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos. They are still part of your squad and gain power during the power phase as normal, but they're off the side of the table. During an allied character's activation, if Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos are part of your squad and are not on the battlefield yet, the allied character may then play this card. Place a flare token within 3 of the allied character that played this card. During the next cleanup phase, place Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos within range 1 of the flare token. That's right, Chris. They are parachuting in, just like our boys did in World War II. And, you know, this card does a lot of interesting stuff that might not be their first glance.
Dude, it sets so many things up.
Mm.
And it's, I mean, there's so many shenanigans that this card could really, really help lead to. Maybe not all of it is competitively viable, but that doesn't mean it's any less fun. I think it's important to note that you are not suffering power disadvantage or anything. They're still gaining power during the power phase, so you're not coming onto the board with a disadvantage. And I guess my biggest question to an accomplished Shield player such as yourself, Jesse, is what is the absolute latest you have kind of held off on playing this card? Have you held off on this till round 2 ever?
No, I don't think so. No. And I've only played this card a couple times, to be fully transparent, because something we'll get to every Shield episode, but the card strain in Shield is unreal.
Absolutely.
And I think outside of fun kitchen table games, and obviously this is so fun, like deploying on top of a building or a giant rock feature or something like that, and now you're in cover and you're scoring something and you're shooting down at your opponents. Great. The theme is great. The play is great. I think this card's strongest competitive feature is a tech against, you know, the super tall teams, really. I'll explain what that means. It's a way to help your priority be matched with your opponent. It's like, say you're playing a Thanos Guardians or like a Black Order or something, and they're 3 or 4 wide, and you want to try to take that priority token back, this might be a way to do that. You know, you go fairly tall, not super tall, but fairly tall yourself. And then these guys are off the table. They're not counting for passing purposes. They're not counting for activating purposes. And you can take that priority token back and maybe get that first strike on the next round, right? And then these guys come out in that round or something. But I think the toughest part of this card, Chris, which I don't like, is you got to have a plan still to get all your secures and extracts.
Yep.
And then on top of that, unless you're just in the driver's seat with secures and extracts, this card might just be a detriment to you because you're losing X amount of actions throughout the game. You know, it's like I played a game recently, you know, where it's like we played a local tournament and Logan got shattered twice by Ulic, right? Two rounds in a row. I lost 4 Logan actions without him even being killed. You know, and arguably that's worse, right? Because he's not even a focus of soaking up damage. It's like he's just not going, right? So in a way, this is like, this could hurt you really bad because this is like a Danny Iron Fist, you know? This is like a Doctor Strange activated token or an Ulic shatter of your bones. I think the toughest part of this is like its strongest power is this sort of scenario I'm talking about. And maybe in another scenario where you're like a similar team that's medium width or even a wide team, it's just going to hurt you. So you have to know when to play it.
That's tough.
But I'll tell you this, you want to play these guys 95% of all shield games. So like this isn't a bad card to have in your 10 necessarily, you know? Because you know you're going to play them
just for when you know it's going to work. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just tough. The card strain and shield is real because we only have 5 cards in this game, and one of them is already locked with the eye in the sky, right?
Absolutely.
And
then
two are probably locked with our restricteds, right? So would this be one of your last 2 in shield? At a competitive level, I don't think so, but definitely at a kitchen table level, and especially if you love Nick Fury Sr. and the Howling Commandos, you want to play this. It's just too fun because this card too, Chris, breaks the rules of like movement and stuff too, because it's just a place, right? So like you can put them behind a terrain feature, scoring something your opponent thought was safe, or get them in, you know, Black Widow's face. She thought she was scoring a secure and an extract safely on a back point, and now they're plopped down next to her and they're just gonna light her up the top of next turn, and now they're gonna sit back there and do the same thing she was doing and stealth scoring. So there's a lot of cool things that can happen with this, but it's a game by game basis for sure. It's not an auto include by any means.
Well, I will tell you, I was going to maybe save this for the affiliation corner, but yeah, I'm going to throw it out here now. It feels right now. I think there's something here in A-Force with Angela leading the charge, dropping off She-Hulk, and then you play infiltration off of Angela. Now you've got 14 threat on their back line, round 1.
Yeah,
I don't know how viable that is. It clearly is not good against attrition teams, but
yeah. It asks questions though.
It asks some questions and it forces them to deal with some pretty big things. And you've got your support characters back there to either soak up fire or to go ahead and enable She-Hulk to double tap every round.
And which is not a bad thing either. And obviously they're good in A-Force, and we can just talk affiliations now, Chris. Like we're talking, I think they're strong in A-Force because they get more power, get around their issue of them only having a gainer. So that through them getting more power, they're getting more I Got Your Backs and more Siblings and Arms off. And obviously Siblings and Arms is very powerful with characters like Angela, She-Hulk, Captain Marvel, to name a few, just to make sure that they get up the board and get to do exactly what they want to do every time they activate. Because you will take a subpar activation with these guys to make sure those characters get a better activation, right? So you will happily take a move, Siblings in Arms, I move up to one of those characters, then a Siblings in Arms, right? And then maybe just one attack with these characters or move back, you know?
Well, they're the intersection of support and attrition, right?
Yeah, definitely.
They're a half support character in a lot of ways. They help you cheat extra attacks. But at the end of the day, you just have to decide what role are they fitting maybe in this team, or what role are they fitting this round even, or this activation. So it can be pretty complex, but the only way to figure it out is to play them, get them on the board. Anyway,
and that's the question we should be asking ourselves every time we play a 3 threat, Chris, honestly, because I think some of us get fixated on, I got to do the thing I got to do with this character that they do on this turn. And really it should just be, well, I've got several 3 threat workhorse characters in this game. What's the most optimal thing I need to do right now? Oh, I need to double move with this 3 threat character. Perfect. I'll do that. Right. Very simple. And obviously all these 3 threat characters have their quirk. They have their powers that make them shine. But at the end of the day, the game is either won by tabling someone, which is very unlikely, or points. And, you know, these guys can do what you need to do at given times. But let's move on to the rest of these affiliations, Chris. Right at the gate, top of the alphabet, Sam's Avengers. I think it's a cool spot for them. They are not affiliated, which is a bummer. But between Sam's mini drop-off and between their siblings in arms, you actually can set up a lot of interesting things early, like round one and round two, get some pieces in place. These characters also obviously love the synergy with the Sam leadership. Oh, you daze one of my models. Well, someone moves short, gets a heal. These guys get trigger. I got your back. You could even do the short move with these guys off of the Sam leadership and then trigger. I got your back, because since you are the player responding, you get to choose the order of your response. So say you daze my war machine. I'm going to say, well, Fury Senior is going to move short from the Sam leadership. And then now I'm going to pay 2 power on Fury Senior and trigger. I got your back. So a lot of interesting and fun synergy with Sam. And also they're jumping in the Sam spot, being another 3-threat character, which Sam loves 3-threat characters.
Oh, yeah. I think they're tailor-made for a Sam splash. Absolutely. But they're also good in a lot of other affiliations. Jesse, they're just good. They're just good.
I know. They're just a solid 3-threat, right? And Cabal, fine. That's great. More power, more damage, right? Any version of Cabal.
That was
really great in the Mal Cabal, right? Because you get to deliver him, right? With the sibling.
Oh, yeah, dude. Love that.
But it's all, once again, it's about finding the room for them. So let's move on to some more interesting places that might be off the beaten path. One of my favorite places for these guys is the Dark Dimension, because they're getting 2 power round one. Siblings in Arms is online. They can move their max distance. Stay range 2 of Dormammu. Siblings in Arms him up. Now he's on the midline, basically, and he hasn't even gone yet. Like, absolutely powerful, especially on those demons downtown, those gamma waves, which Dormammu wants anyways. And I think they're a great piece because every round they're getting that 2 power and they're not going to take the detriment from Dormammu's leadership because they are so good at spending power and they have to spend their power because, I mean, essentially we just talked about in the strategy phase, they always want to pay for Siblings in Arms. They always want to pay for I Got Your Back, and they always want to do their spender every chance they can. And they never have enough power to do all of that, right? And even add the icing of the grenade every once in a while, right? It's just more power math in there. So I think it's a really cool spot, Dark Dimension. But moving on, Defenders is actually pretty cool for these guys. Defenders have a lot of large characters that need to be in places to do a lot of things. They help with that with Siblings in Arms, though expensive with their power economy. Doctor Strange's mystic empowerment on them is kind of insane.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Them shooting from stealth with a mystic attack against a Wolverine or something, right? Like, that's awesome.
I have not got enough reps with Doctor Strange in this game. It's on the docket post. It's on the docket, but my goodness, that is such an interesting thought. I love that.
I foresee me returning to Defenders very soon because missed them. And they were one of my favorite teams early on because I think they're just so, frankly, all over the place in a good way. I mean, they're the best of the Avengers and the best of the Convocation and the best of the Midnight Suns all in one team, you know?
So many just excellent characters. And I don't just mean like, I don't mean just kits. Yeah, I just mean a wide range of Marvel characters that are all very liked and in a very, very cool niche, you know, very mystic, it's awesome.
Now, Chris, you already alluded to it, but we'll mention it while we're here. Midnight Suns, pretty cool spot for them because there are going to be those times they are outside of range 4 and it's just kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But you're like, that's fine. I'll bump and then I'll double tap, right? And then maybe a Siblings in Arms out. Like, there's a lot of interesting things that can happen that your opponent might not expect with them. So I think Midnight Suns is a really nice place. Also keep in mind, we talked about their objective play being strong with the double move, with the Siblings in Arms. Now you add a bump into that equation, and like, we know the power of medium-based models in Midnight Suns, quite honestly, because of the bump alone. But closing out with a couple interesting and I think strong places for them to be. Hydra is one of those. And Hydra, we've talked about on the show a lot. You know, people get really fixated on the Hydra leaderships. One gives a lot of power. One does condition shenanigans, heals. Okay, they're good in both those places for obvious reasons. I mean, I think in Red Skull's Hydra, really strong because they're getting a lot of power, right? And they're doing stuff. But also the secondary part of Hydra that, you know, should be discussed is they're more than just their leaderships. They are a reroll faction. They have two characters you play all the time, Baron Zemo, Baron Strucker, that have innate rerolls built into them. And this is, what do you know, a turret character. So like, turret characters slot so well into teams that have essentially innate rerolls all the time, right? So
right,
Hydra's got like a mini reroll secondary or third string leadership based on top of their leaderships. And these guys, when they throw the grenade and Strucker, they're healing, right? And they're moving conditions around us. That's just cool. So I like it a lot. So keeping with that theme of like enabling them to do Siblings in Arms early or bump or things like that. Because, you know, when you have a gainer, like a lot of things open up, Chris, because they're guaranteed. One of those things is in humans. Simple as that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Pass a power from Lockjaw to them. Round one, they're going to siblings in arms, Black Bolt up the table. Now you're just cooking with gas, right? Like you've already done stuff that you need to, like they've already gotten more value round one than they probably would in a lot of other teams because it's the guaranteed bump. It's the guaranteed hop for someone else, just like Dark Dimension. Makes a lot of sense, right? Very simple. And definitely a great place for them. The last two interesting places, I think, are Spider Foes. It's similar thought process to all these other ones, but they can kind of sit on the back, shoot from distance while your other Spider Foes are kind of invading the opponent's extracts and secures.
Fulfilling that support role there, pretty hard.
Yeah, and they also help models that really struggle with movement, like Mysterio and like Venom, with their siblings in arms. So, I mean, the rest of the Spider Foes do not struggle with movement at all. And this team in particular, you might only be enabling the slower models and then themselves with siblings in arms. And that's perfectly fine because they can sit on back on the map and stealth and shoot. And the same thing goes for Winter Guard. I think they're a really, really neat piece in Winter Guard. I think they kind of even fit the theme in some weird ways, but it's like they can potentially do that thing I talked about round one, walk up, shoot, siblings in arms, someone up. But at their worst, like you can take them and Bucky and Winter Guard and sit those both those characters on back points and have the rest of your Winter Guard in their little Winter Guard bubble up the map, right? And you got people scoring on the back, shooting from range. You've got literally Dynamo, Ursa Major, Red Guardian in your face, like just in the fray, right?
Pretty nasty.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. And obviously, I've already sang the praises of delivering a high threat model, but I think I mentioned Dark Dimension. I think their second best place for that delivering a model or even equal to Dark Dimension is the Sentinels. Just straight up.
Oh, yeah.
Getting Prime up the table round one.
Huge.
Like, it doesn't even matter what they do round one, Chris, quite frankly. As long as they can get him up the table.
Yeah.
Like they'll reposition round two where they need to be. Like say they're not even on a secure or something. Like you got unlucky with the objective draw. That's fine. You still got Prime up the table on either a side or up the middle, where depending on what map it is.
And he's so good.
He's so good. And they actually synergize with Prime really well because he can use his rerolls on their got your backs too. And you can maybe get some auto activation kills on your opponent. Like your opponent thinks that, let's say your opponent attacks with a ranged character on one of your characters, dazes a model. They shoot at that model. They get primary rolls. And now they've dazed that character before they get their second action, right? That's like the dream. And it's not unlikely in Shield and in Sentinels both because of those rerolls. And that closes out with Shield. I mean, they are one of the most essential pieces, just straight up in Shield.
Oh, absolutely. If you're playing Shield without them, I'm very sorry for you. Jesse,
we glossed over it. They're only Shield affiliated.
They're only Shield affiliated, but I don't want to invade your corner here, but I do have a place that I think they're very good.
Tell me about it.
That hasn't been mentioned yet. To no one's surprise, the Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos, I think have a place if you're trying to play an X-Force or even a Weapon X list. And let me tell you why. You need gun lines. You need safe back scoring characters with this affiliation. The only one in affiliation you have at the moment with Weapon X specifically is Domino. And even then, you don't necessarily want her all the way back because then you're not getting any value out of her. Then you're just left with Cable if you're playing the X-Force side of things. So this automatically brings something to the table that the affiliation needs. But I want to talk about first round plays with Laura Kinney. X-23.
Okay. Yep.
Being able to get her up the field, activate, shoot, and then bump Laura up. Laura goes to assault whoever got shot at, right? These are all very, very, very strong things. And just the added support from Got Your Back, it's a very fighty team. That's huge. But the added support from being able to slip against an arms people up in those teams that they do not have much action economy outside of a couple of characters. So I think they're just a wonderful straw to stir the drink in that affiliation. Yep. I don't think that they're absolutely necessary. I think they're an interesting thought and an interesting play style. I think if you bring them, it opens up a few things, but it also closes a couple doors too. So
nothing wrong with a three threat character that can shoot from range, really.
I like them a lot in Weapon X, X-Force. And they're going to be making my roster here very soon.
keep in mind too, they can just siblings in arms cable, right? Before he exactly. even has his body slides, right? So
yeah, at worst, they're just enabling an already pretty powerful character. And yeah. I know there's some Cable maligners out there, and I just want to preface what I just said. He is a very powerful character in the right spots. If the crisis scenario is against him, or if it's a bad matchup, he's better left off the table.
He's just like Thor. He's one of the most powerful characters in the game if he has power.
Exactly. So,
right. So a lot of that goes on how your power building goes and how your opponent deals with Cable. And
Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos can help that, because maybe now you don't have to pay for body slide.
Sure. First round. Yeah. Yeah. And then you got more throws online, because we've always talked about.
Exactly.
I've always kind of sang the praises of you should be throwing with Cable every round, because he has Absolutely. A Magneto level throw, which is unheard of in this game, quite honestly, outside of Magneto. So
that is Chris's tiny, tiny, tiny section of Affiliation Corner.
Very exciting. Well, closing out with the shield discussion, it should be obvious, but they help you get your shield people in place. They help you get more got your backs off, so you get more attack saturation outside of your own turn, which shield loves, and they give you a little bit of movement, which shield does not have, quite honestly. They also give you shield a tiny bit of chase, which shield lacks outside of Spider-Woman and Agent Venom. So it's like they give you chase in the way of they can hop themselves, or they can hop allies further up before they go to actually chase, because shield is so horrendously bad at chasing. It's not even funny. It's their biggest weakness in the game. So,
well, and they've also got pursuit, which does help on the chase.
It does. So an absolute essential piece in shield, an absolute incredible model. We haven't talked about the model yet, but I mean, it's custom base, Hydra ruins, Gabriel's throwing the grenade, Dum Dum's shooting, and Fury's commanding. I put a cigar in my Fury's mouth. Had to happen.
Well done. Well done. Dum Dum's bowler on point.
Whew. Yeah, bowler and mustache. Yep.
It's a pretty impressive model to get three distinctive and very different looking characters to maintain that visual distinctiveness in each of the three characters on the model is pretty impressive. Fury's Finest is supported by our wonderful patrons. You can become a Fury's Finest patron by going to patreon.com/Fury's Finest.
Of course, you can follow the show on Twitter at Fury's Finest Cast and Instagram, Facebook, and Twitch at Fury's Finest. Email us at furiesfinest@gmail.com and leave us reviews on your favorite podcast platform of choice. It really helps us out. And even if some of you are multi-podcast platform users, if you can leave us reviews on all those that you use, it means a lot.
And like Jesse said, guys, keep rating, keep reviewing. It means the world. We see you guys. We're honestly extremely blown away and humbled every time we have to talk about this. And I'm sorry we have to talk about it so much, but this is the world we live in.
It is.
But thank you so much. We're like I said, love you guys, constantly humbled. The MCP community is unrivaled.
Of course. Yeah. And it is the world we live in. But I mean, also, Chris, I know a lot of people can't support us via Patreon. I mean, most of the listeners don't. So it's right. like one of those things where if you want to support us in a small way, following our social media pages and leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice does help us out, does help people find the show, and does help get more people get into MCP, which is what we ultimately want to do and create for Bingo. This very game. Of course, you can find Chris and I on various places online. You can find me, Jesse, on Twitter, Instagram, and Longshanks at Jesse Aiken. That's JSSEAKIN. And check out my new Star Wars Shatterpoint podcast, Hello There. Everywhere podcasts can be found, and on social media at Hello There Cast. That shows going very well. We're in full swing. These episodes have been massive undertaking right at the front. It's been a fun challenge for me as a creator, and Amon's a credible co-host that brings it every week. We've got a lot of stuff in the works for that show, so it's only the beginning. Chris, where can everyone find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Chris Bruffett, where nothing's going on at the moment, and that's okay.
That's my Twitter too. Yeah,
and absolutely. That's going to change soon. I've got some big things coming for you guys as soon as possible. I'm real bad at not being able to keep my mouth shut about things, so eventually it will happen.
Stay tuned for After Dark or something. Absolutely. But we hope you guys enjoyed more dives into Shield. Until next time, thanks for listening, true believers.
Excelsior.
The world has gotten even stranger than you already know.
At this point, I doubt anything would surprise me.
$10 says you're wrong.